tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 7th of April 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today we're going to take another look at the grooming gang phenomena, and we do have to keep talking about this because it's still occurring all the way across the country. It's still occurring in all the countries in Europe which actually have Muslims in them. In Britain, it's predominantly Pakistani. In Holland, it's predominantly Moroccan. In Finland, it's predominantly Somali. It might be a different ethnic group that is the majority in each of these countries, but it's still the same phenomena that we observe, this grooming gang behaviour. Thanks to Rupert Lowe and his rape gang inquiry, this has highlighted a lot of these things that were going on, and now we have the British government, the Labour Party, having their own inquiry into this. And these reports that have been buried for many years are starting to surface. And this one is a particularly shocking headline, and I'm taking this from GB News. The headline is, "Grooming gang victim smuggled into Parliament by abusers and presented to senior politician for sex." And when I first heard that, I thought, well, there were these allegations a while back that were about senior politicians, retired politician or head of a company, and that he was a paedophile and he had been abusing these children in a children's home. And it turned out that it was all fantasy. And the police went and they arrested the person that was alleged to have done this. And he was accused of rape for many years until it eventually all came out that this guy was a total fantasist and he had made the whole lot up. And he was given 14 years. So that there was no other evidence to corroborate his story, effectively. And yet the police still went and arrested this person. So when I first saw this, I thought, well, you know, could this be the same? But looking into this, no, it doesn't appear to be the same at all. There's a record of this. There's evidence. There's evidence that there's been suppression of evidence. Plus, when I was in prison talking to somebody from part of the criminal underworld, and he was telling me about how he knew for a fact that there were senior police that were involved with sex parties where they would get children from the local children's home. And the high-up police officer that was involved in this, and he was like a media darling, and the journalists loved him, and he was always in the newspapers writing puff pieces about him. And eventually he was caught doing it, and he was prosecuted. And the person that I was speaking to, he had evidence on all these other police officers, effectively, that were involved and these people that were high up. And I say he wasn't a nationalist, didn't come from the nationalist scene at all, but he knew about this going on with these MPs and with these police, with underage girls, basically, and with underage boys. And now we have this confirmation of this here. Grooming gang victims smuggled into Parliament by abusers and presented to senior politician for sex. A grooming gang victim has alleged she was taken into the Houses of Parliament as a teenager to be presented for sexual services to a senior politician. The woman, Amelia, not her real name, and I do wonder if she has called herself Amelia after the popular nationalist figurehead, Amelia, that was created by the government's own Prevent programme and then reappropriated by nationalists. I do wonder whether she chose the name herself. But anyway, this woman, Amelia, says she was sexually exploited in Oldham during the town's grooming gang's crisis and was transported to Westminster by one of her abusers between 2001 and 2002, the Sun has reported. So that's over 20 years ago that these grooming gangs were in operation, and they were obviously being protected all the way up in the Houses of Parliament. They were getting protection for these grooming gangs. We don't know whether the MP was a Muslim MP, whether it was a white MP. I mean, you just don't know. But effectively, there was protection of these grooming gangs and facilitation of them by the highest offices in the land, members of Parliament. The man told me to tell people I was his niece, so I just walked right in with him. There was no security or anything, Emilia told the newspaper. Again, that implies that this was right at the top of society. I mean, normally you would be searched if you were going in there to meet a politician. She was able to walk in with somebody and say that she was his niece, and she wasn't searched. She wasn't asked who she was, and this was just allowed to happen. She said she was introduced to a prominent political figure whose name she recalls but did not recognise at the time. So she knows the name of this politician. And it wasn't the politician that she went in with. So she obviously went in with a fixer, somebody who fixes things for and arranges things for these politicians. And this fixer had arranged for this girl to go in there for sexual services, basically. So he must have been providing young girls, basically, for a politician. And that must have been understood. Otherwise, there would have been a suspicion. Surely there should have been suspicions raised about a different young girl going in there all the time. Because, I mean, I'm quite sure this didn't just happen with Amelia. It must have happened with others. And surely the suspicions should have been raised, but obviously nothing was done about it. They didn't think it suspicious. It was clear to me that I was being taken to meet someone to see if they liked me and wanted sexual services from me, she said. And as I say, it seems to me that this person that was taking her there probably had a number of other girls that he had taken there as well. I mean, I don't think this is just something that this politician just suddenly decided to do then. I would imagine that it was probably something that he was used to doing. Amelia alleges she was later sent to upmarket Manchester hotels during what she now recognises as party conferences, where she was forced to provide sexual services to multiple men. Now, I think the Labour Party were in power at this time, 2001, 2002, and it might well have been the Labour Party that had their conferences in Manchester. There used to be a prominent website called Labour 25, which used to name all of these paedophiles that were involved in the Labour Party. Don't forget, we just recently had a paedophile that was part of Hope Not Hate. He was also a Labour Party candidate, I believe. And he also helped to draft the Online Safety Act. And he's been prosecuted for child abuse, propositioning somebody who he knew was underage, effectively. I think his surname was Leon or something like that. He was a Jew as well. His parents came to support him from Israel. And all he was given was a suspended sentence. So if you're a child abuser, you just get a suspended sentence. If you put up stickers saying it's okay to white, then you'll get a 2-year prison sentence, as happened to Sam Melia. So the conferences that she was taking to were likely Labour conferences. And as I say, it's been known for a long time that there's this paedophilia link with the Labour Party. Harriet Harman, a prominent Labour Party female, I think they refer to her as the mother of the house now. She supported the paedophile information exchange in the 70s, a group of paedophiles that said, well, we just want to swap images of children being abused. We don't necessarily want to abuse them ourselves. And Harriet Harman was involved in the Liberty Group that Shami Chakrabarty was the former head of. And the Liberty Group wanted to see this paedophile information exchange legalised. And they wanted to lower the age of consent. So there was no age of consent. And Harriet Harman supported this group, as did other prominent politicians and people at the time. Peter Tatchell, I think, supported this organisation as well. I'm saying I think that. I'm not absolutely certain on that one. people should look that up. Peter Tatchell's link to the pedophile information exchange. And I'm not saying this is just down to Labour and the people on the left either. There are obviously conservatives that are involved in child abuse. It just seems to be at the top of society. Now, we have these people with the worst morality that it's possible to actually have. And that seems to aid them into rising to the top of society. I mean, I was just thinking this the other day, but if you have a monarchy, somebody is born into power. And that was our tradition, is that you had a monarchy, you had a king. And if you don't have a king, it means that people will fight one another, kill one another, abuse one another, do whatever dirty tricks they can get away with to actually get to the top of society. So perhaps this idea that we had a monarchy, it was there to prevent the worst sort of people from becoming king. Because if you allow anybody to be king, then people will just fight to make their way to it. If you can only be king and rule a country if you're part of a family, then that prevents that, and that prevents that that fall to the bottom of morality in order to make your way to the top. But it does appear, especially with the Epstein files and all the people involved in that, that right at the top of society there are pedophiles, elite pedophiles. And this is now getting exposed to the majority of the people, the masses. As I say, 15 years ago, it was only known by pretty much the truth community online that were researching this sort of stuff. Now it's mainstream. She further claims she was trafficked to hundreds of men as a teenager, including police officers. And again, this was confirmed for me while I was in prison about the police officers being involved with underage girls at sex parties. And of course, it's not all police officers, but these were high up police officers. These were like detective inspectors and higher than that that were involved in this. This person that I spoke to, he had a lot of information on them. Unfortunately, he's still inside. At the age of 16, she alleges she was taken to a Manchester hotel where she had sex with a Greater Manchester police officer, who showed her his identification badge. So this goes all the way up. Protection from the police, protection by the politicians. She also claims the same officer later collected her from her mother's home and drove her to a local beauty spot where they had sex in his vehicle. In a separate incident, Amelia alleges that at 17, she was found intoxicated and injured by another uniformed officer, who then took her into a police station and had sex with her in an interview room. Again, this is the sort of thing that we hear about today as being particularly shocking. There was that police officer that was part of the Metropolitan Police who exposed himself and then killed that woman that there was a big protest after. Everard, I think her surname was. And there were also people that were involved with him also that were accused of rape. And I think one of those may have happened. It may have been somebody who had called the police for help and ended up being raped by them. Again, this is happening in the 2020s. But what she's talking about here is happening 20 years ago. So it's not like this is something new. I mean, it's misuse of authority as well as rape. She says, my abusers knew where my family lived and would ring them if I didn't turn up. I felt they were under threat. Well, you would think that if your rapists are phoning up your family to ask where you are. I mean, they clearly know where they are. Greater Manchester Police has acknowledged failings in its handling of Amelia's case. As I say, this is not just an idle fantasy here of somebody. An internal report provided to her in January, seen by the Sun, described the conduct of two officers as unacceptable and said both required improvement. Is that all? They both required improvement? I mean, having sex with a young girl in the interview room after she was found beaten up, and the other one that had been having sex with her since she was under the age of consent, and she was being trafficked by a grooming gang. Greater Manchester Police also admitted it failed to record her complaint that her case was being covered up because it involved high-profile politicians and policemen, describing the omission as not acceptable and confirming that procedures have since been amended. So her reports were obviously credible. She obviously had information that she would only have had if she had had contact with people high up in the police and high up politicians. Greater Manchester Police acknowledge the failings that have been noted in this report and they apologise. The report reads, so they acknowledge this. However, her complaints about how officers handled her allegations of sexual abuse by police were not upheld, with the force concluding that an acceptable service had been provided. So it's completely acceptable for these police to then sexually abuse her in the interview room, is it? The report also notes that the media declined to identify her abusers, making investigation impossible, a claim which she disputes, saying that she named perpetrators and accompanied officers to locations where the abuse took place. And clearly the fact that they accept that what she was saying, then she must have told them who these politicians were, because she gave like identifying information about them. Amelia reported her allegations to her local MP, Jim McMahon, in 2023, who then contacted parliamentary security. So, I mean, this woman's been trying to get something done about this for the last 20 years. Her case was mistakenly referred to the Parliamentary Liaison and Investigation Team, which protects MPs, rather than being investigated as a criminal matter. Was that really a mistake? I mean, she goes to Parliament, says, look, this man raped me when I was young, and instead of quietly investigating it, they tell the group or the organisation which is responsible for protecting MPs, effectively protecting MPs from prosecution for things like this. She later received an apology, and the case was passed to Parliament's safeguarding lead, who advised her to contact the police. I mean, she's already contacted the police about this, and they already admitted that they failed to do anything about it. I wonder why. A House of Commons spokesman said, "We recognise the frustration expressed by the individual and the seriousness of the allegations. When concerns such as these are raised, the House administration is required to direct to the relevant external body, in accordance with Parliament's safeguarding policy. This is because the House of Commons has no statutory role in the investigation of historic safeguarding concerns." So they're effectively saying, well, we didn't have any option. There was nowhere that we could actually refer this woman to other than the Office for Protecting MPs. They didn't have an office for investigating MPs. They only had an office for protecting MPs from investigation. Well, I have another article here on the grooming gang phenomena as well, and this is about the scope of the Labour Party's grooming gang inquiry. Their headline is, "Maggie Oliver declares massive trust deficit in scope of grooming gang's inquiry, still being failed today." And Maggie Oliver was the whistleblower that blew the whistle on the police cover-up of the Rotherham rapes. Maggie Oliver has voiced ongoing concerns about the scope of the newly published rape gang inquiry, despite acknowledging improvements from earlier drafts. Now, look at that phrasing there. GB News are now using this term rape gang rather than grooming gang. Grooming gang, of course, is a sanitised term. I mean, you could argue that people are still trying to cover this up by referring to them as grooming gangs rather than rape gangs. Speaking to GB News, the grooming gang whistleblower described having a massive trust deficit, as do most survivors and victims of rape gangs. The grooming gang's inquiry has published its terms of reference with confirmation that it will probe whether ethnicity, culture or religion played a part in the nationwide scandal. And it's been difficult enough to get the government to actually look at that. I mean, at first they weren't even going to look at that. They were just, again, which shows that the cover-up is still going on. If they were not going to look at the role that ethnicity, culture and religion actually played in this. I mean, don't forget, the vast majority, like 99% or 99.9% of the men that were involved in these grooming gangs that were raping these young girls were Muslim, with the vast majority of them being Pakistani. And again, 99.9% of the victims, with the vast majority of them, were white. They were white victims. So, of course, ethnicity, culture and religion should be looked at as whether it played a role in it. I mean, these girls said that they were referred to as kafirs and just dirt, basically, because they were non-Muslim. And they were treated as if they're white trash or white slags. And I mean, some of these rapists actually said this in court. You know, they made it quite clear how low they viewed these girls. And yet, to date, none of these trials have ever been prosecuted with aggravating circumstances. You know, you hear all the time of some violent crime happens and the police will say, well, it was aggravated by incitement to hate. It was aggravated by hatred of another race. So therefore, we need to increase the prison sentence. I mean, they have the mechanism there that if a crime takes place and they believe it was motivated by hate of any ethnic group or any minority group, then they add something like 30 or 40% onto the prison sentence. And to this day, none of these trials of these grooming gangs none of the prosecution has included these terms, aggravated by hatred of minorities. And yet that is quite clearly what it was. They were targeting white girls simply because they were white. If anybody white was to target somebody simply because they were black or simply because they were a Muslim, you know, they would really throw the book at them. Of course, they'd be accused of being motivated by hate when they did this. But because the people in the dock aren't white, it doesn't apply to them, apparently. The terms of reference will be laid before Parliament when it returns from recess on April 13th, after which the full investigation will formally begin. And you would think that since they are using those terms that Maggie Oliver would be pleased about this, but she's not. She's still not trusting this inquiry, and neither are the victims. And that's because it was the government that covered all this up. It was the politicians that helped cover this up. And they're still doing it. When Keir Starmer refers to the people that are concerned about this as far-right thugs, then they're still doing it, aren't they? Instead of acknowledging these concerns and trying to do something about it, they're hurling insults at the people that are calling for these concerns to be investigated. I mean, it was only because so many people put pressure on the government that they agreed to do this. And again, there's been massive loads of pressure have had to be put on them to get them to investigate the link between the rape gangs and ethnicity. A former detective, that's Maggie Oliver, who has facilitated meetings between more than two dozen victims and inquiry chair Anne Longfield, recognised that the final terms of reference represent progress. I do think that the published terms of reference today are a big improvement on the draft ones, and they have listened to some of the things that we said, Miss Oliver stated. I mean, it's just amazing that in the draft terms, they didn't even have, like, ethnicity in there. However, she cautioned that the devil will always be in the details, signalling that significant issues with the inquiry's framework persist. A central criticism from Miss Oliver centres on the terminology employed throughout the document. Survivors who participated in consultation meetings had been emphatic that the phrase grooming gangs should be replaced with rape gangs, yet the language remains what she considers overly sanitized. This is a really good point. As I say, it seems to be the reason why GB News are now referring to them as rape gangs. But if you're referring to them as grooming gangs, then you're minimizing what they actually did. It's as if, oh, we can't link Muslims with rape, we'll just have to say, oh, they were grooming them, they were just offering them sweets and free bags of chips. No, they weren't doing that. They were raping these girls and they were trafficking them. So it's good that GB News are referring to them as rape gangs, but the inquiry won't refer to them as rape gangs. It's still referring to them as grooming gangs. And I agree with Maggie Oliver here when she says this is overly sanitized language. She says, we're talking in these terms of reference about exploitation when it was rape, it was violence, it was torture, it was degradation, Miss Oliver explained. And they were horrific things that went on. Somebody branded a woman's buttocks with the word M on her buttocks to show that she was owned by Muhammad. The murders that took place, arson, houses were burned down. these girls were horrifically tortured in many ways. And then to just say, oh, well, it was a grooming gang. They groomed them. I mean, they did horrific things to them. All the while using these racist terminology against them, you're calling them degrading terms, you're calling them white so-and-sos, effectively. You know, if you were to call somebody a black and then afterwards use the word bastard, you know, you would be accused of incitement to hate, you'd be accused of using racial slurs, but it's perfectly fine for these rape gangs to refer to their victims as white slags or white trash. I mean, really, the words white supremacist should be seen as a racial slur because it is a slur to call someone a supremacist. And then they're using a racial word at the beginning of it. And calling someone a white supremacist, it should be seen as a racial slur, but it's not. It's just continually used by our opponents and they get away with it. Nobody seems to point it out. The whistleblower emphasised that examining ethnicity, culture and religion remains essential to understanding the full picture of these crimes. Miss Oliver expressed deep frustration with the framing of these failures as belonging to the past. She noted that the Home Secretary had again referred to historic failure when addressing the inquiry. Every single victim, every single survivor that was in that room is not an historic victim. They are still being failed today, she stated. And again, the way they talk about it as a historic failure, as if it's no longer going on, as if the government have now stopped the grooming gangs. They haven't stopped the grooming gangs. I mean, I've seen evidence that they even go back to like the 1970s. It might even be the late 60s when this was first reported. And it's something that never used to happen until we had a Muslim community in the country. I mean, that's the sad thing that we have to say about it, is that if we didn't have the Muslim community in the country, we wouldn't have these rape gangs. Of course, the government will say, oh, yes, but there's plenty of people in the Muslim community that aren't involved in these rape gangs. Well, that doesn't really negate the argument that if the Muslims weren't here in the first place, none of these girls would have been raped, though, does it? I mean, just because there are also some Muslims that don't engage in rape doesn't excuse the fact that there are some Muslims who do engage in these rape gangs. And if it wasn't for the government's immigration policy over the last 50 years, none of these girls would have been raped, would they? Because they wouldn't have a Muslim community in the country in such a size that this thing sort of thing could occur. And the government knew that it was likely to occur because they know what goes on in Pakistan and India, for instance. When the British Empire pulled out of India, straight away the Indians pushed all the Muslims, the Hindus pushed all the Muslims out from India into what is now Pakistan, and there was a massive war of rape, effectively. They just raped loads and loads of women. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's absolutely horrendous. This is the sort of thing that goes on in these countries. And if you look at, I think it's Nigeria, they just recently had a rape festival, which is apparently this thing that they do once a year. And if any female is found on the streets, then she's raped. And there's gang rape, effectively. We just had an asylum seeker in the dock who just said that, the rape is sex in his country that he comes from. It's no different. And I've heard this before, that they don't have a different word for rape. It's just sex in some of these countries. This idea that a woman could be able to consent, it's not a part of their culture, not a part of their civilization. So that should be the cultural part of this that they're investigating here. But the people that are really to blame for this are the government for inviting these groups into our country when they knew that these sorts of things could happen. The whistleblower also highlighted a glaring omission regarding government responsibility, arguing that the Home Office had been pulling the strings in these failures. Well, we just heard in this last news story here that this girl was trafficked to a member of Parliament. So clearly you had MPs that were helping to cover this up. You had the Home Office that were involved here as well, as she's saying. You had directives not to investigate these things because they didn't want to inflame community tensions at the time. You had Nick Griffin and the British National Party and Mark Collette. They were highlighting these things, and it came from the government. They wanted to pretend that these things didn't happen and that the British National Party were just being racist They're just being mean to Muslims. You had Keir Starmer, that was the head of the Crown Prosecution Service at the time when these crimes were not investigated. So again, I mean, there could be links there. And this inquiry is not going to look at those links. And it's, say, Maggie Oliver, who probably knows more about this than anybody else, she says that is a glaring omission. Her charity has launched a judicial review against the government for not implementing recommendations from the previous IICSA inquiry. And that previous child sexual abuse inquiry did not even look at grooming gangs as a separate phenomena. It just lumped all child abuse in together. And then at the end of it said, oh, well, Muslims aren't overrepresented in it. Well, of course they won't be, because 85% of the country is white. So you'd expect 85% of the all of the abuse that goes on together to be carried out by white people. If you look at the rape gang phenomena and gang rape between large numbers of men, then that's almost an exclusively Muslim pastime. Home Secretary Shabnam Mahmood said the grooming gangs scandal is one of the darkest moments in our country's history, where the most vulnerable people were abused and exploited at the hands of evil child rapists. The Independent National Inquiry will now begin its crucial work to uncover how these crimes were allowed to happen and root out failure wherever it occurred. How are they going to be able to work out how this was allowed to happen if they're not even going to investigate the links between the Home Office and the police, who did not investigate these crimes and who even went and arrested the fathers of these girls for trying to get their girls back from the rape gang? Shabnam Mahmood continued, the chair and I have agreed that the inquiry will be laser focused on grooming gangs and will explicitly examine the role of ethnicity, religion and culture of the offenders and in the response of institutions. Again, well, that's good that they will do that. Will they thoroughly do that, or will they still be trying to avoid stigmatizing Muslims? And what about investigating the links between the Home Office and the police forces that didn't investigate these crimes? I mean, we need to be looking right at the very top of society. As we heard here, we need to be looking at politicians that were involved in this. Were they responsible for calling off these investigations? There are all sorts of other things that this inquiry should be looking at. Finally, she said, there will be no hiding place for the predatory monsters who committed these vile crimes. Well, I hope that's true, but if she's not going to look into the politicians as well that were involved, then I'm afraid those predatory monsters up there in the Houses of Parliament, they're still going to get away with it, aren't they? Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of a Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.